Good grief. Question everything. Why?
Welcome. You're listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with Amy Lewis Rowe and Laura Schmidt.
All right, Adair, thank you for joining us today on the Good Grief Network podcast. I want to take a few seconds and introduce you to our listeners. So the first question is, tell us a little bit about yourself, where are you from, and then we'll move on from there.
Yeah, so my name's Adair Kovac. I've been in Salt Lake City for a little over 10 years now, but I grew up in Georgia in a kind of suburban town called Conyers, and I work in software development, so it's not really related to the environment or grief work or anything like that. But I really have a passion for activism and mental health and the environment and just trying to imagine a world that's worth working towards.
So our next question for you, Adair, is what brought you to the Good Grief Network? I know that you sat through some sessions last year when we were running it in Salt Lake City. How did you find the Good Grief Network, and what did you think of it when you sat through the session?
So I saw the event on Facebook, and a few people I know had marked it as like they were interested in going or something like that. So I thought, oh, yeah, some people I know will be here. And none of them ever actually showed up. So I guess they just, knew people who were involved and, like me probably saw it on Facebook and wanted to check it out but never got around to it. But, I went that first meeting, and it was a little intimidating, right? This session was being held at someone's home in their backyard on, a beautiful summer day. But I had to kind of like find out how to get into this person's backyard. So it was a little bit intimidating, but I just felt that I really needed something like this. This was the first year of the Trump presidency, and that had launched a lot of realizations in me, not just related to Trump, but related to how the larger system was already very destructive. And it was maybe a little bit of a fantasy to think that things were all going to be okay just because Obama was president, or because I thought Hillary Clinton was going to become president. So I had this series of realizations about both the strength of the right wing, including the racist elements of it in this country. Climate change was continuing to accelerate and continuing to loom as a big threat that was probably going to exacerbate all the other the world's problems. And I learned a lot more about settler colonialism and indigenous issues. And it had just been a very brutal year for someone who was following politics and caring about the world from my specific vantage point. And so I just felt like I needed to go there. So I went, when I got there and listened to that first discussion group and participated a little bit, it was so clear to me that I was coming back, because I'd never been in a place where people were so openly talking about their emotions, their experiences, their concerns for the world, their hopes, as well as the hardships they'd been through and trying to think about and confront these issues. People were just very aware both of themselves and of society. And I wanted that in my life. I wanted to be part of that. And I wanted to become more like the people I was meeting in this group. So yeah, I went to that first session. I think it was step 6. And then I went to all the other ones. And when that group ended, I kind of signed up to continue potentially leading some activities for the group in Salt Lake, which I'm doing now. So we just finished step 3 of our local session.
Sort of follow up, and we'll talk a little bit more about the Salt Lake City group in a little while, but I'm wondering if you identify as an activist.
Yeah, I definitely do. And that's one of those labels that was kind of thrust on me more so than something that I originally intended to adopt, but then it definitely became part of my identity. I first found out that I was an activist after attending a protest event back in 2008 when California passed Prop 8 banning same-sex marriage. I was a freshman in college at the time, and, you know, I got up the day after elections and walked in the Student Center to see some of my fellow LGBTQ students who were from, a couple of people I knew who were from California, just crying. You know, everyone else is celebrating Obama's victory and, you know, just looking at the student who's, you know, working her reception desk job in the Student Center and just crying because it was a matter of her own neighbors rejecting her validity as a person. So that was like a very emotional moment. A lot of people in Salt Lake went out to protest the Mormon Church's involvement in passing this proposition. And I went with a friend, and in the news the next day, I saw that this was, you know, thousands of activists had gathered to protest this. And I was like, oh, I guess I'm an activist. I don't feel like an activist. I just went out to support something I believed in and to be part of a community that was being affected by something pretty bad. But I guess that makes you an activist. And so after that, I've embraced that title. I've done some sort of work in animal rights and disability rights, some anti-rape kind of work, just a variety of different causes. And part of what I've been doing in this process of joining Good Grief and then just trying to process what's going on over climate change and so on is trying to get towards being able to be a strong environmental activist.
Right on. My question for you, and you've kind of dabbled in this, I'm just going to push you a little further, is what does it mean to be an activist for you? What does that look like in the world?
So I think for me, a lot of it is that it's part of my identity that I stand for doing the right thing. I stand for the oppressed. I'm willing to speak up when other people aren't speaking up. I'm willing to spend time and emotional energy when other people are maybe just trying to enjoy themselves. Not that enjoying yourself is wrong or anything like that, but it's a priority that I've made in my life to try to change the system. And that means confronting despair and moving past it, just as much as it means being willing to sacrifice. And I think that there's a lot of different ways to do activism. Some people are mainly, you know, posting on social media and raising awareness. One group I'm in, a Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women campaign that I support as an ally, has meetings every other Sunday that go for 2 hours and are very heavy on organizational stuff, but then lead to a lot of in-person activities, tabling, protests, trips, art projects, educational talks, and stuff like that. So sometimes it's sitting in a conference room for 2 hours on your Sunday afternoon. Sometimes it's going out and being on the streets, just showing up at protests. Sometimes it's being the person who organizes a protest, gets the permit, if you get a permit, posts all the social media events. Sometimes it's being the person who says, hey, this is really important, and individually contacts a lot of different people and asks them to be there to speak out. Sometimes it's going to you know, your senator or congressperson's office with a group that's talking on a specific issue, asking for specific legislation. And sometimes it's being the person who's challenging organizations maybe to do more if they're a political party or a nonprofit organization to kind of not just take nominal action or to speak out. And a lot of activism happens in things that actually aren't that public facing. Sometimes you're literally just on the phone with someone who's just suffered yet another setback, and you need to like talk to them so that they don't go and take a drink tonight and end their sobriety when they're fighting for a really important cause. So there's a lot of things that kind of go on behind the scenes within activist communities, supporting other activists or supporting people who are most affected by the issue, letting someone crash on your couch. There's a lot of different things that happen that could be called activism. And it's always a community effort. You know, one person can do a lot, but when that one person is doing a lot, it's because they're at the center of a network and they're connecting with other people and making smart decisions about how to have an impact. And most of the time there really are. Maybe you see one person who's giving the speech, but there's hundreds of people behind that person who's helped that person get there.
Yeah, I appreciate the way you're talking about activism in a much more multifaceted fashion than what it's normally talked about. And so that brought up two questions for me. And the first is how do you get into those circles? If you're, say you're somebody who feels alone and kind of helpless to make a difference, how do you stumble into activism or meet an activist? Or what is a good way to get into it? And then also, I don't want to forget to include your experience personally, but also because I think we all need self-care, but the importance of self-care with all of the things you're describing.
So for the first question, how to get into activism, I think it's incredibly easy with the social media world that we live in. There's lots of meetup groups that are around different themes, many of which would be activist causes. There's Facebook events. There's probably local people you can follow on Twitter who will post about things going on locally. There's nonprofits you can find out about, Google, look around and see their buildings in your neighborhood and ask more about. If you see that a talk or a documentary showing at your local library or something like that is being put on by a group, maybe find out more about them. Go up at any festival where people are tabling, there's going to be some organizations tabling, or there might be people standing around leafleting who can't afford a table at the event. So there's a lot of ways to start finding these communities, but by nature, they're communities that are generally trying to get their name out. And then you can just make connections, talk to someone who's doing this stuff. And if you're a Facebook user, add them on Facebook, and maybe you'll start getting invited to events, or just go up and introduce yourself. If it's not a group where all the meetings are just posted on Meetup, you know, if you have to be in the in-group, then it does involve just like talking to the person and maybe showing that you are trustworthy. So, you know, I don't think it's difficult to get in. What is kind of difficult is finding the right one, finding something that has meetings that work with your schedule or whatever activities they're doing work with your schedule. And you agree with them in a sense, like you agree with their priorities or their ideology, not 100%. I think you shouldn't hold out for 100% agreement, but if it's outright incompatible with how you see the world or what you want to be doing, that's not necessarily something you want to commit to forever. I will say that if what you want to do is get in, then sometimes it's best to just commit to something that will start you moving and start you having a regular commitment to an organization. And from there, you'll see more opportunities, you'll meet more people, you'll see more ways of acting, you'll learn more about yourself and how you operate as an activist. And from there, you can branch out and maybe start finding projects that better suit your style, or you can, you know, start new projects and so on. You know, there's other ways, like talk to artists. A lot of artists are doing politically themed art, so you can find it that way. Personally, a lot of how I've gotten into activist groups has been through LGBT community groups, because a lot of LGBT people are activists by nature of our tenuous position in society. That both means that we have to be activists for our own rights, and then we form networks with other people who are activists, who are queer as well, but maybe also undocumented, also Black, also disabled, and also Indigenous. And so you start seeing these other causes as you get into this one group. So if you do belong to any sort of social group that has an activist component, that doesn't necessarily mean like an identity politics thing, just like there's certain religious groups or other sort of interest groups where there's kind of an activist wing of them. Like, you know, that happens maybe in academia as well, that some people who are studying a field like the environment are moved to take action for it. So yeah, I'd say like really start going in a direction you're interested in as far as like what sort of people you want to be around, and try out a few different groups, go to a few different meetings, and then find something that sticks. And if nothing else, just do your own actions. Like when there's something that's going on that you really care about, post on social media, maybe go to like the big local protests and so on. Take a photo of yourself holding a sign you made, even if no one else is out there, and just like start taking these steps, and you can definitely start living that very purpose-filled life of trying to protect what you care about and change destructive systems. So that was the first question, I guess. So you also asked about the importance of self-care and something about how you do self-care as an activist.
Yes, because I'm loving your answers. You're giving so many options for people who might not understand what activism even is. So I appreciate that. And then I also am personally just thinking of a younger version of myself and how quickly you can burn out when working on these heavy issues. And so what has been your secret for self-care? Or do you have favorite methods or tools? How do you sustain yourself as an activist?
So I think the number one thing you can do is figure out how you can address whatever tendencies you have towards perfectionism or self-shaming or trying to people-please, any of those things that are going to cause you to drive yourself to burnout because you're trying to be the perfect activist, or you're afraid that if you say no to anyone or anyone in a certain group that you want their respect, that suddenly you'll be worthless as a person. Anything that's going to make you not accept yourself as being good enough is going to start dragging on your activism. I guess some people maybe have perfectionism that drives them to work long hours in activism and do great things, but most people, I think that'll hold back, and even those people who it does fuel a lot of action, I'd worry about them having consequences like collapsing at some point or undermining their own work because they're not taking care of their emotional side, and that causes them to make errors in terms of judgment or interpersonal situations or not being able to admit their own faults. So I'd really say do that work, and it's not a one-off kind of work, but it's just something to be conscious of. Think about, am I trying to contribute here in whatever way I can in a positive way, or am I holding myself to perfectionist standards? And the other part where this comes in is that you are going to burn out sometimes. You are going to have times where you need to do something and it's worth doing it, but it's going to take all the resources you have emotionally, time-wise, energy, and more. And you're going to have a period after that where you're going to have to take some time to recover. And if you haven't done the work to try to like take care of yourself on an emotional level, have compassion for yourself, love yourself, the end of that kind of spurt of activity is really hard because there's going to be interpersonal frictions. You're going to have doubts about whether the approach you took was right. And then you're also going to be hard on yourself for needing to take time off. And you'll just intensify what's already a difficult thing that you just need to recover from. The same as if you were an athlete and you just, you know, did your big yearly competition and went all out. You would probably need to recover some after that. But for some reason, when it's our bodies, we understand that we need to recover. But when we think it's something that's just mental, we don't understand that we need to recover. You really need to go in there with the mindset that you are doing something very difficult and you're using a lot of resources at your disposal. You're going to run out sometimes. You're going to have to take care of yourself to try to pace yourself. And then when you do need to take a recovery period, you're going to need to take that recovery period and have compassion for yourself during it. And then, yeah, I think what it actually looks like, specific items of self-care, really varies by person. Maybe someone goes on a camping trip. Maybe someone else spends time with their friends or family. I think a big one for most people is going to be having an outlet to talk to people when you're feeling down or you're feeling like you have doubts about what you're doing, or you just like feel like you screwed up. Have like some sort of confidant, people who are close to you that you can talk to about those things. And also just have those people who are not going to be super judgmental, because within activism circles, there's a lot of judgmentalism. It is like when you're trying to get people to change or organizations, institutions to change, you're going to be criticizing them. But if you're in that mindset all the time, it's really toxic. But a lot of the time, even these same people who are maybe on Twitter being really critical or in a public speech being very critical, if you talk to them in a heart-to-heart as a friend and a network, you know, part of a network of activists or a community, they're going to be a lot more understanding that we are all human, we all make mistakes, and this is difficult for everyone. We don't always know what to do. So I'd say, you know, human connection is really good. Connection with nature, meditation, having a journal you can write in so you can have some like private time to think things through instead of having everything always be public because you're always speaking out, has been really helpful for me. But yeah, I think sometimes it's, you know, reading a book or just doing something that doesn't matter in the grand scheme of things and letting that be okay.
What insight. Thank you, Adair. I'm interested in following up because I know that you work a job right now that's full time. And so I'm wondering if you'll speak to the people who think that they don't have time for activism or they have to provide for their families or, you know, people who just feel the constraints either monetarily or with time. How do we convince people that being an activist for something you're passionate about is worthwhile? And do we need to convince them of that? Does everybody need to be an activist?
I think that in some sense, almost everyone is an activist. So this picture you're painting of someone who's working long hours, has a family to take care of, just doesn't think they can take time off or fit in like a protest or, you know, one of these weekly meetings into their schedule, but who does really care about an issue, who wants there to still be a world for their children to live in 20 years. That person, I think, is already an activist. I don't know how they're doing it, but if this is on their mind, they're probably bringing it up with friends, with family, with coworkers, that they're very aware of the hardships they're facing under our economic system and our social system that doesn't value care work, like taking care of children, and that doesn't value the labor of them as workers as much as it should, that they're aware of those hardships as well as the ecological hardships or the human rights issues that they're fighting for. So I'd say those people are almost certainly already activists, and I don't know how they're doing it. Maybe they're posting on Facebook, maybe they're talking to their coworkers, but they're the people who have networks that can be activated when we get to these tipping points in society where change is coming fast. These are the most important people because they're the ones who've already been talking with friends, family, coworkers, etc., about these issues that are affecting all of them that they're very aware of. And they're the ones who are going to get to a point where they activate these networks and say, you know what, this is the day that we're going to go out in the streets, or this is the day we're going on strike, or, you know, my children don't have a future right now, so I need to put everything else aside and demand that we have political change. You know, that's like one side of it. But I guess the other question was like how you can make time or how to like prioritize that. And I think there's a lot of ways. Like when you are kind of feeling beat down, it can be hard to see activism as anything but something that's going to be draining for you. But that can be completely the opposite. We all need social connection, and activist events are social events. Communities that are trying to create change are communities that are socializing. They're people who can help you out in your personal life, who might, you know, watch your kids for you, or, you know, like help out if you're a little short on rent that month or something. So these communities can actually be a really important source of support, and some of these events can be relaxing. For this MMIW campaign I'm on, we have some people who support just by cutting out little felt red dolls that we use as pins for, you know, people to show solidarity and awareness. And that's, you know, something that some people can do as a relaxing kind of thing. You're at home and you want to just have some downtime, but you want your hands moving. So there's often like little things you can do, and it varies from everyone. Maybe you can cook, maybe you can just post on social media, maybe that's your thing, or maybe you can be the one to connect people or something on a more social level. All of these are really, really important things within activism that you can do without burning yourself out. And certainly if you're lonely and don't get enough quality time, there's so many groups out there that are talking groups, discussion groups, or just groups of people who really feel like they're on one team because they're doing, you know, occasional protests, not something that's going to take up all your time. But even this occasional protest can be this really intense bonding experience that can help create a social supportive network that is still present in other areas of your life. So I'd say try to look for ways to be an activist that don't drain you, that renew you. If you're already at the point where you don't have any more resources, time, or emotion outside of your regular life, then don't try to demand that you go put in, you know, 10 hours a week doing some difficult activist activity, kind of look at your schedule how it is now and see where you can still get your needs met while connecting with activist communities or doing some small tasks or whatever, occasional tasks, whatever is going to be helpful to this group that might actually end up giving back more energy and more support to you than you're putting in.
That's such a great point, Adair. I'm glad that you're bringing this up.
Well, and I love the fact that you're talking about how there are many forms of activism. I think oftentimes when people hear the word activist, what comes to our minds is the person who's angry at a protest or at a march, you know, the person who's up front and screaming. But as you've been highlighting, there are many ways to get involved. And activism really is about supporting your community and establishing these different connections that we have. I think all of this is incredibly insightful.
Well, and what I hear you saying is know your limits, because the possibilities are endless. And if you have a little something to give somewhere, you can probably find a way to be helpful with that. And at the same time, if you're someone who's pushing yourself too hard, that can cause problems down the road or lead to burnout or worse. You're hitting the nail on the head with this one, so I appreciate it very much.
Yeah. So now that we've talked a little bit about activism and community and things like that, and I'm interested in digging a little bit deeper into your role with the Good Grief Network. So to refresh what we were saying, you said you came to the last one that the Good Grief Network put on about a year and a half ago, I think now. And you showed up at someone's house, which is incredibly courageous. But what I want to know is what made you want to stick with this project as we continue to develop it? What made you say like that you can tackle organizing it and setting this up in Salt Lake City?
So something I've noticed is a lot of the same people that I know who are most socially conscious are also depressed or anxious. A lot of them have trauma in their past or ongoing trauma, and that probably leads them to care more about trying to make the world a better place, but also makes them a lot more vulnerable to falling into despair over the state of the world. So when I was going through the Good Grief Step program as a participant that first time, I noticed that it was really helpful to me. It helped me kind of be able to see past that despair and feel like I had more hope and like there were opportunities to change the world and make it a better place. And I also saw in Good Grief an opportunity to help a lot of these people that I know who really care about the state of the world but feel really depressed and disempowered to move past that. And it would help both them because they'd be able to see the world in a more hopeful way and to feel more empowered. And it would also help the world because it would unleash all this energy that's going towards people feeling terrible and despairing and redirect that energy into actually looking for solutions and pushing for change. So for me, I definitely thought that Good Grief was both like a good offering to the world that could help people in multiple ways. And it was also something that matched my interests. I'm extremely introspective. So I really also thought that Good Grief is kind of a good place for me within what is a much larger movement and transformation of society to confront the ecological crisis and other problems of our modern world. So yeah, I think that kind of goes back to some of what I was saying about finding the way to do activism in your own way. Good Grief is kind of a combination of multiple of my interests. I will say that at some point, as I was trying to get this new session of it started up in Salt Lake City, I did have those doubts like, well, why am I spending so much time? You know, the only real thing I'm trying to start up on my own right now is going to be just like people trying to process their emotions. And is that going to go anywhere? Climate change is super urgent. We needed to take action decades ago and certainly need to take action now. What does it mean that I'm just going to be sitting around talking? And those are some of the external criticisms we get, whether they're said outright or kind of implied, that can feel kind of bad to receive those criticisms. But then when I actually started the session up here, the first session was pretty brutal. It was way more emotionally intense than I expected. There were a lot of people there who were in like really dark places mentally, and the topic we were discussing was really hard to confront. And there were a lot of people, and I felt kind of responsible to make sure that the event went well. But then the second and third sessions were taking that beginning and then showing me how they lead towards real change in people who need it the most. People who are the most overwhelmed and the most depressed, the most despairing, the most caught up in a line of thinking that says there's no way of dealing with this. Those are the people who've been coming back session after session, and I can see the transformation in them. I can feel the increased energy in myself, the increased commitment and hope in myself, and how I'm actually taking more action to inform myself about climate change and various responses, and to start building up towards some more of what you would think of as traditional activism, directly trying to change the systems. So I see the impact it's having on me, and I see the impact it's having on the people in the group. And I'm just so glad that I'm doing this, and I'm proud of what we as a community are achieving. And I can also see how this kind of thing is just going to become increasingly necessary as climate change becomes something that fewer and fewer people can deny or can kind of pretend is all going to work out fine without us taking action.
Yes, thank you for those answers, Adair. And I just want to say that we are so grateful to know you on a personal level as well as a professional level, and to have you on our team. Listening to this interview has, I guess I don't even know a good way to say it, but I know that my heart feels happy listening to your answers and your thoughtful responses. We did have a question that I think we kind of may have covered a bit already, but I guess if you have any extra tips or advice for those that are currently suffering from grief or despair?
I think my first piece of advice is going to be a really hard one, and that's be willing to feel the despair and be willing to have your worldview crumble. The last session we had of the program here, a few different people ended up talking about values and how our response to climate change is really about our values. We're sad because of what we're losing and of what we believe in that isn't happening or is being undermined by climate change. And I think when we look at values, they're really important. I'm not saying that we should move away from our values in general, but we need to be willing to see where some of our values are based in things that are themselves part of the problem. A lot of our values are things like, oh, I want to be living the same lifestyle I'm living now in 3 decades, or I want my children and grandchildren to be able to keep gaining materially and living in like greater luxury, and everything should be convenient. And, you know, this whole idea that's common in the US that capitalism is freedom, and that freedom is more important than like someone's right to like survive and things like that. A lot of these are very warped ideas. What people actually need is things like community. And of course we need an intact environment that can feed us and shelter us and, you know, not be beset by constant natural disasters or unnatural disasters in this case. A lot of what we really want is connection. And in this society, we've often gained in material wealth and certain ideas of freedom, like the ability to fly everywhere or, you know, drive gas-guzzling vehicles at all times. And yet those haven't made us happier. They haven't actually met our real needs, which are for things like community and connection. You know, we'd be better off living lower carbon lifestyles that center humans over profits. And so I think there's a lot of stuff there, and there's a lot of other stuff, values related, that are a result, you know, especially for those of us who are white Westerners, that are a result of centuries of a culture based in colonization, that are actually bad values and don't respect community and complexity and life in general. That's maybe a little far from maybe what you originally asked, but that's really my first piece of advice, is be willing to let your worldview fall apart in this overwhelmingly emotionally stressful reality, be willing to let go of some of what you want and some of the future that you imagined and some of what you think is right. And then get back to what is really important. Things like life and human rights and ecosystems and family, community, connection. I guess my larger piece of advice here is you're on a journey. Part of that is questioning all these things that you think is true, trying to figure out what you really value and what you're really willing to fight for. Other parts of it are trying to like suss out what in the cultural narrative around the economy and politics and society is actually true, what is workable, what's unsustainable, what's actually going to happen in the future. So that's a journey too. And then there's the other journey of how you want to respond to it. And that's your own personal journey. And it also involves the other people in your life. If you start changing, are they going to be okay with that? Or are you going to ask them to change as well? Are you going to try to convince them of anything? Are they going to try to convince you that you're wrong? So there's a lot of different journeys you'll be going through as you deal with this. And I think that concept of journey is really what's going to get you past this phase of wallowing in despair, of being lost and feeling like there's nothing left to do. There is. It's just you need to start going on a journey and find out what that is. Because for you, it's going to be different than what it is for me. For me, a lot of what I've done is accepting my own mortality and accepting that I'm going to see really major climate impacts in my life, and that, yeah, I'm going to fight and try to keep that fossil fuel in the ground and try to push as much as I can for society to change in time to prevent catastrophic climate change, which is actually kind of a funny phrase since we're already seeing major catastrophes around the world as a result of climate change that has already happened. But I think when we talk about catastrophic climate change, we're really talking about civilization ending climate change. And I'm going to fight that with the dual mindset of, yeah, this is worth fighting for and we might succeed. And the mindset of, yeah, maybe this system is too much to beat. And what we really need to do is be prepared to lose so much and to suffer so much and to try to help other people be resilient to that suffering and find meaning in the darkest of times and go forward and rebuild on the other side of really major catastrophes. So for me, that's a lot of my mindset. But, you know, something that I've learned from participating in Good Grief is there's other people with a very different mindset. If you're 80 years old right now, you're probably not going to be around when things get really bad. So maybe that part of feeling like it is personal and this might be how you die isn't there for you, but you're dealing with different struggles. Because for me, it's almost comforting to be able to say, oh, this isn't something that, you know, me and my group of people did to other people, at least not alone. Of course, we used a lot more of the Earth's carbon budget as Americans than the people who are suffering the most right now. But there is some sort of like absolution in being able to say, oh, yeah, I might die in this too, that you might not have if you're part of an older generation where that's kind of less likely. And that there's also a different kind of situation for younger people, like teenagers who maybe aren't in the same situation as me where they got to build a life in the traditional vein of having like a successful material career and so on. They might be looking at a world where it's like, well, do I try doing that knowing it's going to fall apart pretty damn soon? Or do I start trying to build an alternative now? What does it look like to be young enough and informed enough that you've never had the illusion that your lifestyle can continue? So that's another kind of situation that I'm in. And so each of these people is going through a very different journey in terms of what they need to do to confront their grief and how they're going to deal with that. But it's always going to be a journey. And it really involves self-knowledge and being able to have that independent mindedness to say, you know, no one can tell me what to think or how to feel or how I'm going to cope with this, but I'm going to learn from myself, from my responses, from the world, from, you know, any source that I have, and I'm going to learn how to go on this journey myself.
Spot on, Adair. We are filled with inspiration. So thank you for your thought out and heartfelt answers. And I'm just so grateful for the gift of your time and your knowledge and what you're saying. There are so many topics that you have mentioned that I would love to pick your brain about and record a 7-hour podcast and have our listeners really listen to what you're saying and the depth of your experience and your activism. And unfortunately, we don't have time to do that today, but hopefully in the future, as we continue to build this, we can check back in and get some more of those issues out there. What I'm interested in right now is two things. One is, what else is on your heart today? Do you have any other insights you want to share for our listeners? And then the other thing is, tell us exactly when you meet in Salt Lake City and where you meet so that if listeners happen to stumble upon this, they can meet you in Salt Lake City.
Okay, so first thing, what's on my mind this morning? I'm really inspired by the Extinction Rebellion going on in London. So they shut down several bridges and a ton of people showed out. Unfortunately, a lot got arrested because even though we're fighting for the survival of everyone, it's still illegal to do. But I'm really just inspired to see them taking action. And I hope more groups organize and follow in their footsteps and that we keep the pressure on and just require the system to make the kind of change rapidly that needs to happen. So really grateful to everyone who participated in them. And then so for our Good Grief group in Salt Lake City, we're meeting from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. on Tuesdays at First Unitarian Church, which is kind of near the university. But we'll be going through January 20-something-ish. And yeah, we'd love to have you come out. And it's just kind of a talking circle set up. You don't have to say anything if you're not willing to. And if you have something you really want to share, you definitely can.
If people want to get more information about the Salt Lake City group.
So we're listed on Meetup. You can also email me if anyone has any questions. I'm just adairkovac@gmail.com. That's adairkovac@gmail.com.
Well, all right. Thank you, Adair, from the bottom of my heart.
We can't thank you enough, Adair. Your wisdom, your energy is appreciated and needed, and I'm grateful you're on our team.
Thanks for participating in the Good Grief Network podcast today. We really appreciate your time and energy.
Awesome. Thanks.
Thank you for listening to Why, a Good Grief Network podcast with your hosts, Amy Lewis-Rowe and Laura Schmidt. If you like what you hear, consider subscribing, commenting, leaving feedback, or just checking out our Patreon page. We'll come back at you next week with some more information and some more big questions. Thank you for listening.